September, October 1914, and the Austro-Hungarian Empire, this product of mixed nationalities, so many that there's one or two or five of everything in each regiment. Nick very carefully explicates that this is a hybrid army. Goes up against the Russians in a place called Galicia, which we now think of as the bloodlands between Russia and Western Europe. This is part Poland, part Ukraine. It's all mixed up. But at the time, it was called Galicia. And the two armies clash in Galicia. And the Austro-Hungarian Empire, right away, a man named Konrad von Hotzendorf, is in charge of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. What do we need to know about him, Nick?
Konrad is a man who obviously runs the Austro-Hungarian army and has pressed for war numerous times before the war. He wants to fight Serbia. He wants to reassert Austrian predominance in the Balkans. Only an aggressive stance can drag the empire back to its predominant position. But Konrad is, you know, he's a dreamer in some respects, and he doesn't understand or he doesn't recognize the limitations of the army. And so Konrad is always dreaming of these grand offensives. And in some cases, many of these offensives are quite good on a map. They're very promising. He can spot where the enemy is weak, areas, potential for flank attacks and things like this, and developments. But ultimately, the army can never do it. The army, the fragile army of the Habsburg Empire, can never really do what Konrad wants. And so he's constantly on the back foot. They're not able to defeat Serbia in 1914. They get kicked out. A disastrous campaign. And then they're tangling with the Russians. And that's like a sort of light middleweight going up against a heavyweight. You know, they can throw some punches, they can move some, you know, they can move around, they can dance around a bit, but sooner or later that weight of power is going to tell. And that's really what happens. And so Konrad, very early on in the war, has the stuffing knocked out of him, comes in very confident. By December, his army's a rabble, and he doesn't know what to do with it. He loses one of his sons, actually, in 1914 as well, in September. And so that is a shattering effect on him. And so Konrad is a really essential figure of the book, and I think in many ways a misunderstood figure. He's one of the great figures of the war, but fundamentally flawed, I think.
The attack is not successful. The Russians have huge amounts of manpower, some very good guns, and what emerges here is the way the war was fought. Today we think about drones and missiles. It was a transition time for commanders. Konrad, I learned from Nick, believed in the bayonet and infantry, whereas what evolves over the next 2 years is artillery, 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 and trench warfare follows accordingly. Did Konrad ever accept the fact that he was outgunned by the Russians and undergunned by his own preparation?
I mean, you know, to a certain degree, it isn't his fault. I think, like many commanders at the time, he did believe in the offensive spirit, in the importance of grasping the initiative in war and in conducting decisive attacks. The Austrian army is chronically underfunded in peacetime. It's huge, you know, arguments over budgets. They don't have enough artillery. The artillery they do have is very light, weak, fragile. Often they've got bronze barrels because of underfunding. Those often warp or break entirely after intensive firing, so they're not reliable. And so Austria is very light in terms of the artillery it's going to need. It has some light artillery, but it is probably one of the lighter armed armies of the war. And the Russians don't have enough guns, but they have more than the Austrians. And so rapidly, the Russians dominate Austrian forces. And I think that's really one of the key issues. It's not that Konrad necessarily doesn't understand modern warfare, although I suspect there is some element of that. It's that he doesn't really have another way of attacking. He has to use manpower because he simply doesn't have anything else. He has asked for more funding before the war, and that's never come. And so I think in some ways that's more inexplicable, the fact that Konrad seems to understand Austrian weaknesses, but still thinks they're a first-class army that can do these grand offensives. And of course, they never really can. And the casualties the Austrians suffer is just absolutely phenomenal. I mean, they're just absolutely decimated. And the fact that they managed to hang on until 1918 is in some ways an absolute miracle, because they're absolutely, you know, they're really badly handled in the early days of 1914 when it breaks out. And, you know, they managed to keep going, which is quite incredible, really.
The book is The Eastern Front, Nick Lloyd, the Professor of Modern Warfare, King's College London. We're not giving the details of the casualties, but they are unbelievable. Right away, tens of thousands of men killed, wounded, or captured in these battles, and the big guns pound away into the trenches and bodies disappear in the craters. We're now going to turn to the breaking of the Russian army and the retreat in 1915.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.